So Amel was at the PGA, and we got sent a picture of him at Bethpage after two beers, passed out on the ground, lying against a tree.
Wow, two tins and just calling it a day? That's a pretty poor showing. But as I wrote in our group text, it's okay, Amel, I remember my first beer too.
Yes.
First off, Elliot Friedman.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations to the St. Louis Blues.
Yes.
Some say a better story than the expansion Vegas Golden Knights from last season,
mm-hmm.
considering this team was in last place. Let's pause the Blues conversation and focus in.
First of all, can I just say no story was better than Vegas last year?
I don't know, man. St. Louis is last place.
This is a great story.
Vegas,
come on.
Vegas' story was the great job that George McPhee did putting this team together.
No.
But they iced a really good team. This team was bad, Elliot.
Yes,
this team
yes.
was awful and turned it around.
Vegas
season.
Was an expansion team, and Vegas was Vegas.
Vegas that, was an expansion
that was one
team.
Of the few stories that went beyond hockey.
Vegas was an expansion.
That was a sports story. That was an entertainment story.
We will agree to disagree. Perhaps pick up that conversation later. I doubt it.
We will agree that nowhere. I am right and you are wrong.
Listen, I'd agree with you if you were right. Trust me, I really would. Let's get to the San Jose yep. Sharks and what is next. We'll kick off the podcast there. And the usual suspects, as we talked about, a lot of, and now it's come into sharper focus. Now that the season is officially over, Erik Karlsson, Joe Pavelski, and Joe Thornton.
Well, Thornton didn't give any indication in the postgame last night. I watched his scrum. You know, he's earned the right to call his own shot, right? I thought he played pretty well for most of the year. He ran out of steam in the playoffs. So did that whole team. Are you telling me that that guy can't get you into the playoffs?
I like the idea of Joe Thornton being this era's version of Peter Forsberg. You have to drag me off the ice.
Well, he has always said he wants to play overseas, right?
1 year in Switzerland.
Yeah, where he met his wife. I don't know. I mean, you tell me that that guy can't be... Now, if he can't play on the knees, that's something else. Like, that's his decision.
Mm-hmm.
But are you going to tell me that guy can't be a 55 to 60 game player for you and help you get into the playoffs?
Like I said, I am fine with Joe Thornton as long as his health will allow it to mm-hmm. continue to play in the NHL,
yeah.
specifically with San Jose. I have zero issue with it. I'm not one of those leave the stage while they're still clapping. Here's how I'd like to remember you. I'm not one of those people. So to me, Joe Thornton wants to keep playing. Joe Thornton, keep playing.
I'm good with that, too. Karlsson, I think the number one question is he going to need surgery? I suspect the answer is yes, but I don't know that as mm-hmm. we do this now. I know in San Jose they have maintained that they would like to try to sign him. I agree with everyone who said the issue is term. I think the question is going to be, does he want to play in Tampa? And do they want to find a way to make it work?
You think Tampa's the only option for him?
I don't think it's his only option. But if you told me that that was his preferred option, I would see that.
Vancouver?
I think he's going to want to win.
New York Rangers?
The one thing right now is, you know, Karlsson and Berkey showed the other night that he has been very durable. He's played a lot of games, but he's also had a lot of really serious injuries. And I don't know. I just don't know. I've heard mixed things about the Rangers. At times I've heard yes, and at times I've heard no. It's his call. He's a UFA. He gets to make the choice. I just really believe that if it's up to him, he will try to find a way to play in Tampa.
That is going to be a salary cap pretzel.
Yes.
We already think it's bad just with the point signing. We think they'll have to shed some skin.
Well, if you've listened to the interviews with Ryan Callahan lately, he's expecting to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And, you know, and the other thing, too, about Callahan is, you know, he's a proud veteran. He didn't get to play all the time last year. If you send him somewhere where he can play, he'll go. He wants to play.
Will that be enough?
Well, you're going to have to sweeten it.
No, I mean, will that be enough to make room for someone like Erik Karlsson?
Well, I think...
Which sort of winks at the other point, which is, what's the price point for Erik Karlsson?
Well, if he's going to go there, he's going to have to make it work, right? It's not going to be $11 million
a year. The Ottawa contract, yeah.
Hedman makes $7.875. It's going to be around there or less.
Mm-hmm. You think San Jose has a shot of
keeping
him?
I think one of the things that we have to answer here is, does Karlsson believe that the Western Conference, the travel, the physical nature of the games there. Does he believe that played a role, or does that play a role? Everybody who lives in that side of the league knows there are added challenges to playing there.
That's interesting. We had Kyprios on Hockey Central at noon today. He drops by every Wednesday. And that's one of the things he mentioned. He said, look, if I'm Erik Karlsson, I'm getting out of the West.
It's hard to not think about the surgeries and just where he is, you know, physically. So that'll come in play. The other thing in play is, and it hasn't been talked a lot about, but I don't like him in the West. The West, he needs to get back to the East. The East and the West are different. They play different. It's a heavier game. It's not suited for Karlsson. And I think as much as you'd like to say he needed 2 months to feel his way in San Jose, I think the style of play in the Western Conference had a lot to do with it.
I think it's a fair point. I mean, you take more of a punishment in the West, I think, and the travel is harder. Mm-hmm. And, you know, guys who've played in the West and get older, they say it definitely is a difference. So I would wonder about that. Pavelski, I don't know. I mean, if you look at, first of all, San Jose, they generally keep who they want to keep, right? Their history has been to do it.
Yep.
But if you take a look at all their guys, they all get extended a year early. Burns, Jones, Vlasic, Couture. Thornton has waited late, but they know he's not going anywhere.
But he wants to be on evergreen deals, right?
Yeah, but it's also like they say, that like a couple years ago, when Marleau left, he signed for a big number. Last year, when they needed more money, he signed for less. Like, he's willing to do it. But the one guy they lost, and it was because they wouldn't go for the third year, was Marleau, who came right down to the end. And he was a little older than Pavelski is now. And I've heard that the biggest issue with Pavelski is term. Not because nobody thinks he can't play. You know, he scored almost 40 goals this year. It's simply because he's going to be 35 in July. Mm-hmm. And so teams are wary of term deals. So I think that's going to be the question.
So what's the future now for the San Jose Sharks? No first-round pick this year. No first-round pick next year.
But the thing is, despite that, and San Jose keeps a stat of how well they draft despite not having high picks.
Yeah, we talked about Tim Burke last week. Yes.
That, they do that. So they believe in their ability to find players, and they have. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that you're looking at this year is Burns, who was on pace to set a record for most minutes played in the Stanley Cup playoff.
Yeah.
He ran out of gas. Couture ran out of gas. So you're looking at your other guys and you're
saying, Evander Kane in that mix?
You know, he wasn't the same.
No.
I don't know what happened. Maybe we'll find out there's an injury. I wondered if he got hurt in the Reeves fight, to be perfectly honest, because he struggled to score after that. I look at San Jose, and I think you're saying, okay, Meyer, Hurdle, our improvement's got to come from those guys. Those guys have to be more of a factor.
Put LeBanc in that conversation.
LeBanc, for sure, absolutely. Like, if I'm San Jose, I still like my veterans, because a lot of them are under contract for a long time. But I say that when those guys got hurt or ran out of steam, our younger guys have to be able to take a step up.
Mm-hmm. So if you're, because they're both RFA.
But I always expect that they're going to be aggressive, because Wilson,
yes,
he stops at nothing.
Correct. And if you're, you know, the agent for Timo Meier, if you're, you know, Michael Curran representing Kevin LeBanc.
Yep.
How much are you sort of frozen right now in negotiations, given that they don't know what's happening with the quote-unquote bigger players, i.e. Erik Karlsson, Joe Pavelski, Joe Thornton? Like, how much business can Doug Wilson do in advance of knowing what's happening with these guys?
Well, you know, I think that he probably has a better idea now. They've always done a good job with second contracts there. Like, their guys always have taken less. That is an organization where guys have not scored as high as they could. And
you're getting your QO.
But the thing is, like, it's not a no tax state either. Like, California's got big taxes, but guys, they still take less.
That's always surprised me about San Jose, because it's the opposite of Tampa. It is expensive to live
there. It is one of the most expensive places to live.
And you're right. Guys on that second deal. What's a reference you always use when you talk about Doug Wilson?
The dentist.
He grinds you. And he gets the number.
He gets the numbers. I mean, we'll see. Like, you know, Claude Lemieux, who represents Meyer, I mean, he's no shrinking got violet. He will see what his client and he wants. But the history there in San Jose is guys take less, especially on their second deals.
How do you look at this year's edition of the San Jose Sharks, and how do you contextualize the San Jose Sharks in the playoffs, given that there were a couple of controversial calls? They may go down in the history books as being a team that ushered in new calls and changes to the rule book. How do you look at San Jose this year?
That's one of the wildest playoff years ever. If you're down 3-1 to Vegas, come back, force game 7, getting lit up in game 7, get the major, win the series.
Hang on. The power play goal is in the major, not just the major.
Win the series. Colorado, they went up 1-3 times. Game 7, they're up 2-0. McKinnon's arm looks like it's being held together by an elastic band. All of a sudden, Colorado ties it. They get the offside call. And then in this one, they go up 2-1 on the hand pass.
Timo Meyer.
And they never win another game.
They couldn't score after that.
I will say this, that there are a lot of people who said that the best coaching job Craig Berube did in a year of great coaching jobs was after that hand pass, getting his team back together. One guy say to me today that the way that he had his team handle that won them the series.
We saw Jordan Binnington come unglued,
yes,
and he is a really reserved, understated guy.
Absolutely. And so, it is a year. It's a year that's going to change everything. Like, it was funny. Like, last night, there was one point they were mad about Braun. He gets a penalty, and they score to go up 3-1, and San Jose is screaming at the ref from the bench, and one GM texts me and says, come on.
I want to sit that one out.
But, in the heat of the moment, that happens.
Of course.
But I do think there's going to be changes in the league. You've learned that Doug Wilson, if he sees someone that can help him win, he's all in. But I do think that if you're him, you're looking at some of your young players and you're saying, guys, you have to elevate. Our veterans elevated. They needed your help.
You know what I like about Doug Wilson? He's not afraid to take a chance. And you look at last year's draft when he picks up Ryan Merkley.
Yep.
Controversial player, no doubt he's a top five guy when it comes to skill.
Yep.
And, we were at the draft last year in Dallas and saying to ourselves, you can make that move when you have a really solid locker room, when you have a really solid dressing room. Like, that pick may end up being a home run where they got Merkley, or may end up going nowhere. But Doug Wilson took that chance.
And that's the way he is. He believes in their culture. He believes in their group. Like, you take a look at Boston, and I heard on your show you played the Chara clip.
Yes.
Where Chara talks about, I don't believe in treating rookies badly.
Even calling them rookies.
Yeah. You're here, you're part of the group. And Wilson feels the same way about San Jose.
And congrats, despite losing in the conference final, congrats to the San Jose Sharks for an exceptional season, one that will probably usher in some changes in the NHL. 31 Thoughts is brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra Denali.
There's 10 seconds to go in the Western Conference Final. 7 remaining. And the St. Louis Blues, for the first time in 49 years, have done it. You can bring out the Zamboni. The Blues will go to the Stanley Cup Final and face off against the Boston Bruins.
Okay, everybody, welcome once again to another edition of 31 Thoughts, the podcast. That was the San Jose Sharks and what could potentially be next for them. What's next for the St. Louis Blues is a date with the Boston Bruins in the Stanley Cup Final, which doesn't get underway until Monday. But you mentioned a couple of seconds ago Craig Berube and his job coaching the St. Louis Blues after the Timo Meyer hand pass. Want to expand on that a little bit?
So, we've been talking to a lot of people about what happened that night. And one of the reasons that everybody believes there's going to be changes is the look at the end of that game. I mean, It's on the scoreboard. All the coaches on the bench, on both benches, can watch the replays. The players can watch the replays. The fans have their phones. Everybody's looking at their TVs. The only people in the building who can't see it are the four officials. And then when they don't make the call and, you know, you see them go off the ice and Maroon or whoever it was is slamming their stick and Binnington is chasing them off the ice.
Slamming the glass and, oh, yeah.
You know, it's a bad look, right? And the team is unglued. And if you listen to Pietrangelo after the game, he's the captain, and he's saying, well, it's obvious there's one rule for one team and one rule for everybody else. And it's easy in a situation like that for a team to become unglued. And, you know, as we talked about earlier, St. Louis never wavered. They got back on the path, and it's just the latest and an incredible job. And, you know, it's really interesting to me. You know, I read a lot about leadership like most people do, and I try to set a good example for people, and I try to think I'm a good leader for people. But I believe, just for me, more than anyone else, I've always believed the best leaders are no BS types who simply say, this is what I need you to do. And you always know that they have your back. And if you don't do what you do, there will be consequences. But if you do do what you're supposed to do, there's going to be rewards. And he's not a phony, and he outworks you. Like the best producers I've ever worked with, I've always noticed they're there before I get there, and they're there when I leave. Because, you know, it's like, wow, you know, that guy's our leader for the group,
yep,
or that woman's our leader for the group, and they're working harder than anyone else. They are there. They are working. I just think that Craig Berube, like, so he got fired in Philadelphia, and I believe he interviewed in Buffalo when they hired Housley. I don't know if he interviewed anywhere else. He wasn't on anyone's radar. He wasn't a hot coaching candidate. But you watch this guy, Jeff, and all he is, I always ask when I watch a coach, like, can I play for that person? And I look at that guy, and all he is do this, and you do it right, you play. Do this, and you do it wrong, you don't play. And remember that game in Winnipeg when he was yelling at the Jets, and yep, the players were like, our coach, he's a tough guy, he backs us up. To me, it's simple, but it's the most effective leadership. Like every player with Craig Berube knows where the line is, and if they cross it, mm-hmm, there's going to be consequences. But if they do their job and they work, he is going to back you to the end of the earth.
Okay, I'm going to kind of go around the block on this one.
Okay,
for a second. You know where else Craig Berube interviewed?
Where?
Mannheim, the German league.
That's right.
He didn't end up getting the job. Okay, they ended up going to Sean Simpson, who had some success in Europe.
Well, he's got a long history.
So, of course, yeah, you understand that. But the interesting thing there is, so the owner of Mannheim is a guy by the name of Daniel Hopp, who's in his late 30s.
Mm-hmm.
As I am told, you know, really, well, obviously he's an intelligent person, but really good hockey operations guy as well. He's put together a fantastic program in Mannheim. His father, Dietmar Hopp, was business partner with Hetzel Plattner.
Mm.
They formed in a garage.
SAP?
SAP.
Mm-hmm.
And now Craig Berube has just eliminated a team owned by SAP. So there you go. There's my around the block, trying to weasel my way into thought 27 on 31 thoughts.
There were some good ones. Like someone sent me the note last night about Don Sweeney.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
Don Sweeney played 1 year for Dallas at the end of his career, began pro scouting.
I started reading that.
The Bruins, and Doug Armstrong was the GM.
I started reading that tweet. I'm like, where is this one going to end up? Yeah. I always love those
open-ended
tweets.
And actually, somebody responded to me and said that was a Jeff Merrick tweet.
What?
Yeah, somebody wrote, like, that tweet sounds like it's a Jeff Merrick tweet.
Oh, a Merrick special. No, I'm going SAP. I'm going to Germany for my association.
But do you agree or disagree that, like, Berube, like, in this world of, like, what leadership is supposed to be, like this total throwback, old school guy.
I'll give you another one.
Yeah.
And he'll be in the NHL one day. Rocky Thompson.
Yes.
Story around Rocky Thompson. If you saw Rocky Thompson play and you talk to Rocky Thompson now, you will swear you're talking to two different people. And if you talk to Rocky, he'll tell you, yeah, I was a different guy then. And mm-hmm, I'm a different guy now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that guy that played. Just the same way you saw Craig Berube play. When he played, he stepped down for from no challenge. Mm-hmm. He took on all comers, whichever team that he was on. Like, I'm always impressed
when you
with,
play 1,000 games playing that way.
Oh, and you know what?
Like Domi, him, Brashear, like that's something.
Here's one of the things about that style of player. I'm always amazed at the guys who go from team to team and will still do it. It's always difficult when a quote-unquote fighter gets traded, because to do something like fighting, you almost have to be like intimately involved in that team and emotionally attached to that team. What you're doing is right for that team. When that team trades you, it sucks for any kind of player. But for someone that makes his living the way that Craig Berube did, it's got to be tough. Mm-hmm. Because I just put my body at risk for these guys, and now I'm somewhere else. And a lot of guys, when they get traded, are sort of shy about proving the reputation all over again. It's hard for these guys. Mm-hmm. When you stay in one city and do it, you can, I don't want to say coast on the reputation, but you don't have to do it every night. Mm-hmm. When you go to a new city as a fighter, that fan base has seen you in Boston, in Calgary, in wherever, and then you have to do it again for them. That's hard. I never got the sense that Craig Berube ever found it hard to ramp it up again. Mm-hmm. He was the same guy no matter what team he went to. Mm-hmm. That's got to be emotionally tough. That's got to be so draining on you emotionally to be able to ratchet it up, to be able to make your living with multiple teams doing that, that I got nothing but respect for guys like that.
I only saw him really angry once. I covered a Toronto-Philadelphia game once. Yeah. It was I think Ty Domi kind of clowned him a bit. Like, he threatened to fight him, and Domi was running around, and he wanted to fight him, and Domi wouldn't do it, and the crowd was egging him on, and he was playing to the crowd, and I tried to talk to Berube after the game. He was always a very nice person, and he just, like, blew me and the other guys off.
Wasn't happening, eh?
Yeah, he was mad. I always remember that, because the first time, he had a reputation as being, like, a real nice guy, like, when he was off the ice.
Yeah.
The reporters really liked him, and I just remember that day he blew us all off, and guys were like, wow, we've never seen that.
You know who's got the dilemma now? Mark Savard. Because him and Berube are real tight.
Oh, like,
he's talked about that plenty. And he's waving flags
Bruin
in Boston.
Yeah.
So as much as, hey, my buddy's in the Stanley Cup final and so is my former team, which way does my heart go? So what's the bigger story then in St. Louis? Is it Craig Berube or is it Jordan Binnington?
Oh, it's always the player. Like, the player is always the biggest story. It's Binnington. What do you pay that guy?
That's what I'm going to lead to here now, because
we should have Mike Liut back on and ask him that question.
But here's a guy who, you know, interestingly enough, you know, turning down ECHL assignments, finding a Boston says, yes, you can have lodging here and play with our American Hockey League affiliate. As we know, St. Louis didn't have their own affiliate, shared one with Rocky Thompson's Chicago Wolves, sharing it with the Vegas Golden Knights. His story has been nothing short of miraculous. And I don't get the sense that this is Hamburglar 2.0. Like, I don't get the sense that this is Andrew Hammond 2.0, that this is legit. This isn't just a goaltender that's on a hot streak. Do you get mm-hmm. that same feeling?
No, I think he's really good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny because Kelly found in his game a bit of a structural thing he's got to fix about, you know, not having his skate on the post, having his skates outside the post so he can't push off.
Yeah.
But he's overcome that extremely well. And they defend really well. You know, Peter DeBoer said after the game on Tuesday, there was no room out there. And that was true. They give you nothing. They give you absolutely nothing. But boy, that's going to be a fascinating contract negotiation.
Yep. What do you think they pay him?
I have no idea. This is something I'm going to work on. I'm going to ask like a bunch of teams and agents what they think that number is going to be. That's like a homework assignment for me in the future, because, you know, he's 25 years old, and also I think he's 2 years away from unrestricted free agency, right? Because he's 25.
Yeah.
And he just hit the number for minor league free agency. Like, they made sure they got him there. Because if you're 6 years pro and you haven't played enough games, you're a UFA, but yeah. they got him to that number.
Yeah.
So It's interesting.
It's a number of great stories there with the St. Louis Blues organization. The St. Louis Blues organization themselves is a great story. The alumni is a great story as well. Kelly Chase with tears in his eyes, and there's Pronger and Hull and Plager. Like it was a wonderful night last night. And there's a couple of people that I was really happy for. One, Jay Bomeister finally gets that crack.
Absolutely. You know, everybody talked about Joe Thornton, as you mentioned last week. You forget about Bomeister.
Yeah, he's one of those Lundqvist, Luongo, Thornton kind of guys at years of service and now finally getting a shot. I felt great about Tyler Bozak. Tyler Bozak, who essentially lost his position to John Tavares in Toronto. Tavares comes in, there's no more room for Tyler Bozak, and he's off to the Stanley Cup final. I felt really good for him because I always liked him in Toronto.
Yes.
As a player and as a person as well.
We talked a couple weeks ago about why I have a lot of time for Bozak.
Yep. Like, did you not get that warm water and soap feeling about Tyler Bozak last night? Like, way to go. Way to turn a situation where, you know, gone from Toronto, picked up by the St. Louis Blues. And he talked about beginning of the year, I'm here to win a Stanley Cup. I love seeing things work out for people like that.
Yes.
Tyler Bozak.
I'm with that too.
Larry Robinson.
Yes.
Talk a lot about Armstrong, a lot about Berube, and a lot about the players as well. Should we talk more about Larry Robinson and the St. Louis Blues?
You know who else I think too? Mike Van Ryan and Steve Ott. Like, that's a good coaching staff. So Larry Robinson shows up this year because they need help with their D. You know, Mike Van Ryan had to make some changes too when Vince Dunn got hurt and has changed the pairings here and there.
Yep.
Like, guys told me that St. Louis Blues coaching staff, like, they fired Mike Yeo and they promoted Berube. Guys told me the assistant coaches were really worried about their jobs, too. So you imagine how those guys, Van Ryan and Ott, were sweating during the regular season. Yeah, I am with you on Robinson, too.
Mike Van Ryan going to be an NHL coach one day?
Yeah, I always say a rising tide, you know, floats all boats, right?
Yeah.
Like, you don't think that people aren't going to be looking at Steve Ott and saying, is this guy going to be... Like, could you imagine when Steve Ott was playing and he was, like, getting in fights with Peter Laviolette as they left the ice together, that he was going to be a head coach someday?
He's an assistant coach. He's going to the Stanley Cup final, facing off against the Boston Bruins. Quick thought on this one in advance of Monday. Now, you're on the road Sunday.
Yes, because the media day is Sunday.
What do you expect between these two teams?
Oh, I think that's going to be a hard series. Like, every series with St. Louis has been a hard series. They grind you down low. They use their size, their physicality. You know, Boston, I don't think they're the big, bad Bruins of years past, but I think they're a really, really tough team. They play tough. Like, they play hard. Rask has been unbelievable. He's the one goalie that's been better than Bennington.
You don't think he's due for a couple clunkers?
No, I think he's a different guy right now. And you know what? They both could have a clunker in the final and they'll still be fine. Jeez, like, it's going to be a hard, hard series. I don't bet against Bergeron. Like, there's guys I'll never bet against. Mm-hmm. Bergeron's on that list.
Do they have an answer for that top line in St. Louis?
You know what? I think they always seem to find a way. Like, I like Boston in a long series, but it's not a confident prediction.
Let's get to some other NHL issues. We'll talk plenty about the Stanley Cup final as it commences next Monday. A couple of coaching issues. Let's start with Edmonton again. What's the latest in oil country, Elliot?
Well, here's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that Tippett and Holland are going to meet end of this week sometime. Last week, he told Mark Spector 12 to 14 guys. I think that list is a little smaller right now, but I still think if everything checks out with Tippett, he's the favorite. Like, some of the people I heard that were on their list, you know, Lane Lambert, John Stevens was a name potentially on their list. Those are the kinds of names I've heard so far. Todd Nelson, there's been some dispute about it. I think what it comes down to there is Ken Holland knows Todd Nelson.
Grand Rapids.
If he opens up the search, I think that's a guy he could talk to. But I think one of the reasons he hasn't gone for permission to talk to Nelson yet is he doesn't know if he's going to open up the search, that how much he's going to do it. I don't think. That's my read on the situation. So I still think it's Tippett's job to lose.
Also with Edmonton this week, some dismissals.
Yeah.
Dwayne Sutter handling pro scouting. J.J. Hebert, media relations with the Edmonton Oilers. Are we looking at an off-season now of really deep cuts to that organization, you think?
I think there's definitely going to be changes. I don't know how much. I mean, I think there's some contracts up, so we'll get an idea there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, is Keith Gretzky going to stay? Is he going to have an opportunity to go somewhere else? Is he going to feel disrespected at all by the GM search that he moves? I think that's a big question. Paul Coffey, you know, is he going to want to stay or is he going to be removed? I think that's there were some rumblings that he won't be back and maybe by his own choice because he sees the writing on the wall.
Mm-hmm. What about Wayne Gretzky?
That's going to be an interesting one. You know, I
was he in the conversation for the New York job before John Davidson?
No,
I
never heard Gretzky's name. The two names I heard were Davidson and Yzerman. And I wondered about Shanahan, but, you know, someone said, no, there's going to be an extension done in Toronto, which there was, so he's not going to be available. I never heard Gretzky's name in that. They know that there might have to be some mending fences there, and that's not an easy one. I mean, it's Wayne Gretzky. I mean, what else are you going to say? You know, I think there could be some change there, but I don't know. I mean, it's already come. Craig McTavish went to coach in Russia.
Yeah, thought on that one?
Well, I think he probably knew it was time. But I also think that one thing I'm being told right now, Jeff, is that people are saying to me, you know, look at coaching salaries in the NHL.
Yeah.
It's not going unnoticed.
Speaking of coaching salaries and coaches, this one breaking late last week.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Roy interviewing with Ottawa?
I got to tell you, that one was a surprise when I heard it. I had some people say to me they thought initially that it might have been a favor Ottawa was doing, and I had other people say to me, no. He could be in this. He was a total wild card. When Patrick Roy quit in Colorado during the summer and not telling the team before a PR firm announced it, guys told me he was never getting another NHL job again. And they think that this is his way of saying, I want back in, and I'm serious about this.
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned him with LA.
Well, I do think if Todd McClellan hadn't taken that job, I think there was a possibility he was going to be interviewed.
Right.
Because he knows Rob Blake really well. And the Kings do want to change the way they play offense. They do want to be a more attacking team. I've had guys tell me they think it's legit. I've had other guys tell me they don't think it's legit. I think we're going to find out. You know, I think Ottawa's got some interesting ways. Like, I've had guys tell me they think DJ Smith's got a legit shot at the job, and I've had guys tell me they think it's going to be one of Crawford or Martin.
Dark Martin.
So, I mean, we'll probably find out early next week.
Okay, a couple of things. Mentioned the John Davidson to the New York Rangers taking over Glenn Sather's position. Not exactly a surprise.
No, I think everybody saw this one coming.
Homecoming?
Yeah.
Sorts for JD. Like, it does have that nice feel to it.
I'm not sure there's another job he would have left Columbus for, but it's New York. It's the biggest stage. Like, I understand the appeal of New York. Matt Sundin once said in a conversation I had with him when he was deciding between the Canucks and the Rangers that Mark Messier told him, you got to play in New York.
Hmm.
You know, everybody Nothing should like play it. In New York. And he eventually chose Vancouver, but he always remembered Messier saying that to him.
Quick hitters around the league. Do we expect anything to change next year? We discussed it briefly last podcast and earlier on today. Expect anything to change for reffing next
yes.
season?
Yeah, I think there's going to be.
In what sense?
So the commissioner usually meets with the media before game one of the Stanley Cup final, and that's Monday. So I'm curious to see, you know, what he says about it. I think the biggest question is, Jeff, is how far they're going to go. I'm told the officials are willing to have more replay. Two officiating crews were sent home during these playoffs.
Yeah.
None of those guys want that. They want to work. And, you know, as guys said to me, there's too much money at stake now. The debates are no regular season, only playoffs.
For the eye in the sky on everything?
But my reaction is, you know, don't you think the regular season affects money too? Like, you don't make the playoffs and...
Even just philosophically, and yeah. I know it's different already, but the idea of having a different set of rules for the regular season than we do the playoffs.
I agree.
But we already do have that with yes. shootouts, so it's one, I guess it's a slippery slope. We've already done it before.
I think if you're going to do it, do it everywhere. Is it just goals or is it everything? Like, I think the biggest debate is going to be about the scope. What's the scope of it going to be?
Like I brought up last week, are we going to do dump-ins?
Yeah.
Was it really icing?
Oh, I think you always take it to an absurd. Like, you always take it way over.
I take it to a philosophically sound punctuation mark.
No, you always make it absurd. I listened to you talking about the radio last week, and I'm like, Merrick, absurdity. That's what it is. You know, I think the other thing is, you know, someone said to me, if you're going to do an eye in the sky, why don't you take one referee off the ice?
To create more room?
Create more room. You keep that way, you keep all the referees employed, and you can switch. One game you work eye in the sky, one game you work on the ice. Mm. But maybe if there's one less body on the ice, is there more room out there? To me, the biggest question is going to be the scope. How right. far do they go with this?
And then there'll be debate about that once you get an example in the playoffs and
of course.
Expand it, and it's just going to
There's been stuff that's happened this year that we never would have guessed.
Is there going to be any more conversation about video review on offsides?
I would like to see those go away.
I know you would like to see those
go away. I don't know. We'll find out on Monday.
Speaking of officials, what's tough watching Wes Mahaly leave? Do we know? It's weird. Do we have injury update on Wes
Mahaly? The word was that his hamstring popped. I think, you know, our podcast is coming out on Thursday. I'm under the impression that that's about when they're going to know which referees are going. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure we're taping this on Wednesday. Right now as we're doing this, it's 2:30 Eastern. I'm sure they're going to know about Mahaly in the next 24 hours or so.
Okay, one more quick note, and then we're going to get to Scott Morrison
from
Sportsnet, who has a piece coming out on Saturday at Sportsnet, and the big read's already available at sportsnet.ca. It's about the Calgary Flames, 86-89, called Eternal Flames. But one final note, how much should we pay attention to the Minnesota Wild right now?
I think they are going to be one of the most interesting off-season teams. Like, you know, I always talk about how I think a lot's going to go on, and sometimes I'm wrong and sometimes I'm right. Last year I was wrong. I think it's going to be pretty fascinating with Minnesota. I really do. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about Spurgeon, though I do think it's their preference to sign him. Zucker, I think, is all but gone. I think they're going to be looking around to do some things. And I think one of the biggest... Not biggest, but I think one interesting offseason question is, does Phil Kessel want to play in Minnesota?
Wow, the gopher goes back.
I could see that.
Could you also see him in Arizona?
Yes.
With Tockett?
I have said many times that I believe that's an option. But the thing is, like, I don't know. You look at Arizona's roster, what's the deal there that makes sense?
It would have to be for one of the defensemen. Do you not think?
Well, if you're giving up Kessel, don't you want to score?
But what is your most pressing need if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins?
I think they would say scoring. Zucker can score. There's a Kessel for Zucker deal there that makes sense.
Would Calgary revisit the Zucker conversation?
I don't know.
Let's.
I haven't heard that.
Hit a break. Scott Morrison on the other side. Oh, in the American Hockey League, we may have a brother versus brother final. San Diego is playing Chicago. Toronto is playing Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
If Charlotte wins, Trevor Carrick. If San Diego wins, Sam Carrick.
Mm-hmm.
Brother versus brother in your Calder Cup. We'll see what happens there. As the American Hockey League playoffs continue as well. When we come back, Scott Morrison, Elmer Ferguson Award winner, talking to us about Eternal Flames, a new piece he has coming out on Saturday. Stay tuned. Thoughts the Podcast is brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra Denali, complete with the world's first six-function multi-protocol gates. Hockey season is over for most, but spring is here, which means baseball, soccer, and road trips. The Sierra Denali's gate comes with a built-in load stop to keep whatever you're traveling with in place and turns into a step for easier access. And once you arrive, it can also become a work surface that includes a power outlet. So whether you're loading a tackle box, working on a project, or tailgating at the game, we've got you covered. GMC Sierra Denali. We are professional grade.
After 86, we thought 87 was a championship team, 88 was a championship team.
There was a lot of pressure on us to win the Stanley Cup. We had a good team for a number of years.
The expectations were there for this hockey club. We should have won Stanley Cups the next 4 years.
The biggest win is that last win. We don't have it yet, and that's the one we have to get.
Never dreamt after going to the finals in 86 that it was going to take us 3 more years.
We failed to deliver.
Elliot, that is a clip from Eternal Flames, first airing Saturday at 1 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet. The big read is already out right now. Author slash how shall we describe him? Elmer Ferguson Award winner.
That's the key one.
Former iDesker slash multimedia maven.
Former sports editor of the Toronto Sun.
Bon vivant.
I think that's a pretty good resume.
Good friend.
Yes.
Scott Morrison. How you doing, ScoMo?
I think bon vivant ended it.
That brought it to a crescendo. And
father of a goaltender.
Of a goaltender.
That is always a big one.
Mark is a wonderful young man. Yes. And a wonderful goaltender as well. I was a goaltender growing up as well. I can only imagine what my parents went through. Before we get to Eternal Flames, your thoughts on being a goaltending dad?
Well, I was a goaltender myself growing up, and so now I know what misery I put my dad through. Not an easy thing, that's for sure. It's, you know, you want, as with any player, you want them to succeed, and just the spotlight often seems to be that much brighter on a goaltender. And so you're just cringing every time the puck's around them, but more smiles than sad faces during his career, that's for sure.
Elliot, as you probably know, Scott is one of my favorite people on the entire planet. Mm-hmm. I've spent a lot of time working with Scott, and he's told me some great stories, so watch this. True or false, young Scott Morrison, goaltender. Once upon a time, a young Scott Morrison, as a goaltender, punched Ben Wilson.
That is true.
I cannot believe you're here.
Me neither.
Ben Wilson was the scariest man alive.
Yes, he was.
I think we were 12 years old at the time, peewee hockey, and I was playing for the Toronto Blues, and I believe he was with the Don Mills Flyers.
Yeah.
And he was big and mean back then, a terrific player.
He only got bigger and meaner, too.
Yes, there was. And there was a skirmish around my net. I reached down. I'm on my knees. I cover the puck, get my glove on the puck, and he gives me a little kick and a poke, and I felt it. And the equipment wasn't quite what it was today. And so I had been taught by my goalie coach that you don't take that. And so I, on my hands and knees, give him a spear with my stick in the stomach. And he replies with a right hand to my mask, puts me right through the net, dislodges the net, and it slides basically into the boards with me in it. So. Yeah, he was a big boy.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he was tough. Okay, let's get on the
Calgary. My other experience was as a coach.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Speaking of peewee hockey, is we had a team. I was helping coach Don Mills Flyers. We went to the Quebec peewee tournament, and our first game we play a team had a phenom on it.
By the name of?
Mario Lemieux.
Yes.
Who just torched that. I mean, there have been a few that have lit that Quebec peewee tournament. I believe Jagr
was
one of them. And
he
beat
scored
them.
Three. We put a shadow on him. And it's a funny story, is 2 years ago for some pieces we were working on, I got to sit down with Mario. And while we're off camera, I said to him, you probably don't remember. He remembered every detail.
Oh, the best they remember,
12 years old, never forgot every detail of that game and how our goalie stopped him on a breakaway in the last minute of regulation. We won in overtime. We put a shadow on him who was driving him crazy.
Do you remember who the shadow was?
Oh, his name will come to me.
Okay. I'd be curious about it. Now, did any of the players on your team ever become pros, the team that beat them?
No, we had a few boys that went to U.S. colleges, mm-hmm. that sort of thing, but none that I recall became pros.
Okay.
Eternal Flames, give us in your words what this one is all about, because that era of Calgary Flames team playing in an ultra-competitive Smythe division, who's going to knock off the Edmonton Oilers? I remember talking to Wayne Gretzky once, and I said, what was the difference between you and a team like the Winnipeg Jets? And he said the only difference was goaltending. If Winnipeg had a goaltender, they would have been right there with us. Describe that Calgary Flames team, though, in that era and this piece.
Well, they had some tremendous teams, but they had trouble getting over the hump. In 1986 was the only time that they had beaten, or the first time that they beat Edmonton in a playoff series. And, of course, that was the famous Steve Smith off the skate of Grant Fuhr goal.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they went on and got to the Stanley Cup Finals and lost in five games to the Montreal Canadiens. And one of their problems along the way that year is they ended up going seven games with St. Louis in the conference final and kind of ran out of gas
yes.
a little bit. When they
there
got
are a few players who
series.
Said that that's where they felt they lost the Stanley Cup, was yeah. that St. Louis series.
That was a big part of it for sure. And so they really had this feeling because Cliff Fletcher is, you know, was wonderful at building. And Cliff, a dynamic guy with his staff, it wasn't just drafting players. It was Calgary was ahead of the curve when it came to picking up college players and the likes of a Joel Otto, for instance, that type of thing. Yeah. And so they were building this big team. But there was that wall in Edmonton that a lot of, you know, Winnipeg and Calgary would run into. And one year, coming out of 86, they thought, next year, that'll be our year. And they thought that they had a championship team, or they were certainly pointing that direction. And then 87, they had a disappointment. Early in the playoffs, they're eliminated. 88, they have a great team. They'd made some trades with St. Louis to bolster the lineup. They won a President's Trophy. They get to the second round, and they get swept by Edmonton, which is, for Calgary, absolute devastation, especially to be swept with the expectations as high as they were. So then going into that 88-89 season, they're wildly disappointed, but the expectations were still Stanley Cup or bust. And if it doesn't happen this time, then Cliff would be forced to tear that team apart and try to remake it. And early in that season, or in September rather, just on the eve of training camp, he made the deal that brought in Doug Gilmore and Mark Hunter from the St. Louis Blues. And St. Louis was like their farm team, it seemed, for the deals, although they did send Brett Hull their way the previous year.
They kind of sent a good one the other way.
Yeah, they paid for it. And Cliff talks about it. He said that was one of the big differences from 86 team and 87-88 to that team, is all of a sudden you bring in a number one center like Gilmore, great at both ends of the rink, one of the hardest working guys in the league at the time. And you've got Neuendijk, you've got Joel Otto. Their strength down the middle was amazing. They were deep on defense. They'd brought Walmsley in to back up Vernon the year before. So all the pieces were there.
Yeah.
Now it was, you got to get over the hump.
What was your highlight? Like, of all these things you did, I always like, whenever someone does a piece like this, I always like to ask them, like, what's your favorite part of it?
Well, I think what that team went through, what they were feeling going into, they win the President's Trophy running away again, or certainly in the Western Conference, and they're playing a Vancouver team that's 43 points behind them in the opening round. But Vancouver was better than, they were coming on as the season went, and they were better than probably the record showed, but certainly weren't as good as Calgary. But just what that group was feeling, the pressure they felt going into that series, even though they knew how good they were and how much better they'd been and owned Vancouver all season. And then all of a sudden, it's game one, and a former Flame, Paul Reinhart, scores in overtime in Calgary, and it's like,
whoa,
oh my God, here we go again. And just the torture emotionally for those players. And even though they said, like, we bounce back a couple games and you think you've got it, and then you're going, oh, maybe not. And Vancouver just wouldn't go away. And their coach that season was Bob McCammon, great guy, and a character. And he played that underdog card to the absolute hilt. And every day he would meet the media, on every off day, meet the media, and he'd be telling jokes. And quite often the punchline involved something related to Calgary Flames. Like, he had a story once, and I think he told this one to the players, like, five minutes before the game, or just before they're going out for puck drop, he's telling jokes in the dressing room. Or they're showing videos of highlights of how they annihilated them at certain parts of the game. Just, they were the loosest bunch of players. So the one day he's telling the story, he says, about the three coaches that get sent to the electric chair. And the first coach is the Montreal coach, and he said, any last words? And he goes, Viva Quebec. The second coach is the Toronto Maple Leaf coach. He says, any last words? And he says, God save the Queen. Oh, so they pull the switch on the Quebec. Nothing happens. You're free to go. Toronto coach, God save the Queen. They hit the switch. Nothing happens. You're free to go. And the third coach is the Calgary Flames coach. Any last words? And he says, shouldn't that plug be in the wall? Corny as all hell, but the players ate it all up.
Oh, my God, that's fantastic.
They were loose, as loose could be. And played that way and took them to game seven overtime. And it was Vancouver played their best game in game six at home to force that seventh game. And after that game, the Flames got on the bus. And Cliff Fletcher, who we all know, pretty reserved, calm and cool guy, he gets on the bus last. And he tells, they have some reporters on the bus, and he says, can you guys get off for a few minutes? And they close the door. And in Cliff's words, he says, I lost it. And he said, I essentially told this group, he said, you should be celebrating a Stanley Cup in 5 or 6 weeks. He said, so you're going home for game seven. It's all in your hands. And the rest of the message was, and the players got it loud and clear, was, you don't win this year, say goodbye to each other because this team is not going to look anywhere close to the same. This is going to be your best chance ever.
I'm really glad you brought up the idea of grabbing college players and being ahead of the curve. And a lot of that was...
And Europeans, too.
And Europeans as well.
Lube.
Yes, Håkan Lube.
And they're the first Russian.
Who can forget?
Oh, yeah, Priyakin.
Priyakin was the first.
Forgot about that guy, yeah.
A lot of that was necessity, wasn't it? They couldn't wait for players to be drafted and developed. They were close to, you know, competing with the Edmonton Oilers, and they needed players. You mentioned Joel Otto from Bemidji, Jamie McCowan, Ohio State, Colin Patterson, Clarkson. And I wonder, how much in Calgary's mind, Scott, do you think was, we're putting a team together to beat Edmonton? Like, I look at Joel Otto, and I look at those face-off matchups with Mark Messier. Like, those were battles. Every face-off between those two, they were vicious. They were brutal. Just face-offs, draws. How much do you think in the back of everyone's mind was, we're building a team to compete with those guys down the street?
Oh, I think that's totally. I mean, Edmonton wins four cups in 5 years before Calgary gets the kick at it, the second kick at the cat. And so, yeah, all roads you expect at some point in the playoffs are going to go through Edmonton, although they didn't in 89 because Gretzky had been traded to the Kings, and the Kings beat Edmonton in the first round in seven games that year. So, yeah, all roads go through it. And it you built a team that was built for all occasions. People look at the Battle of Alberta now, and I kind of laugh because, yeah, it's intense, and both teams want to win. That was a battle back then. Like, it was a physical war. Guys were getting carted off the ice.
People now, you don't understand what the Battle of Quebec and the Battle of Alberta really were.
There was actual hatred.
Well, I remember the game where, was it Mike Bullard that McSorley speared, and he had to be helped off the ice? Like, I remember watching this and going, oh, my God. Like, I mean, like,
we have jerseys being ripped off and stomped in the penalty box and jerseys thrown into the stands and 3.5 hour games.
Like, you understood as a hockey fan at that time, and you covered it, Scott, that the playoffs were nasty. And I think this, you're reminded now this year, the playoffs are such a different animal in the regular season. But people now have no concept of what those games were like.
I remember, I think it was Doug Gilmore said to me in one of the interviews, he said, back then, he says, you weren't really sure what the line was on the rules. So he said, you'd hack a guy, and you'd hack him again, and you'd just see how far you could go with the hacks before a penalty was called. So there was, the rule book was a lot looser. And you saw when they had that L.A. series, second game, third period, incredible Donnybrook. So, and as I was getting to, you had to build your team with different ways. So Calgary had a ton of skill. They had puck-moving defensemen. They had Al MacInnis with the big shot, although he became more than just a big shot. But you also had some tough guys like a Tim Hunter and Poplinski could play that way. Merzen, Otto could play hard as a shutdown kind of guy who could also score goals, as we found out.
I'm curious who you found or who you thought was the toughest player of that Flames team. And not tough by way of just fighting, but I'll rewind a little bit. A couple of years ago, I went back and was watching the 1986 final. And, you know, one of the things that stands out to you right away is neutral zone play, where there's hooking and holding and dragging guys down, and where now a player feels a stick on his hip, the instinct is go down. Try to draw a penalty right away. You go down and try to draw one. But then a player would get a hook, like a hard hook, and it's deep into his hip, into his stomach. And instead of going down to draw a penalty, they would bend their knees and try to skate through it, knowing that that call wasn't coming. Under that umbrella, who do you think was the toughest Calgary Flame in that era? Not fighting, not any of that, but battling through all of the hooking and the holding and the punches and the spears and the slashes and all of it?
That's a great question. I mean, I think he'd put a Gilmore in that category as a guy who never avoided a scrum. And as Cliff said, the hardest working guy, game in, game out. And he battled when in the tough areas, as they say, and fought his way through a lot of that. Joey Mullen was like that, but you know, wasn't a quote-unquote physical presence necessary. Yep. But he got up and down that wing and scored big goals. So I think a lot of them could easily fall into that kind of description. And they brought up a Theo Fleury that season in early January because they hit the panic button because they lost three games in a row. And I said, wow, we got to do something here. And then he comes up and he's like your fourth line guy and a difference maker a lot of nights.
I like the process stories. And I think sometimes the listeners do too. You can tweet at me and tell me if you think these questions are terrible, people. But I always like the process. So how long did this take you to do?
So we started, I went to Calgary, I was doing a shoot for Hockey Day, and while we were there, we arranged to 8 or 9 of the guys who live in obviously in that area, and we did a all-day shoot, interviews with all of them, and then we arranged the day in the new year in Toronto where we brought in a bunch of guys like Roberts and Gilmore and Cliff Fletcher and whatnot, and then had to go down to Nashville to get Terry Crisp, the coach. And then went back to Calgary. We got the two trainers, Bearcat Murray and his son, Alley Cat Murray, and Lanny McDonald for a long extended thing. Because there were two real storylines for that team that year. One was the expectations, as we talked about earlier, that it was Stanley Cup or bust.
Yeah.
And the other was Lanny, because he'd never announced that he was leaving or that was his last year, his 16th season. But for the first time in his career, he was a healthy scratch for games during the regular season. So every time that happened, that was a storyline in Calgary. The media had to go to Lanny. How are you doing? How are you doing? And everybody talked about, and you know, we all know Lanny as a good guy. Everybody talked about, they knew how pissed off he was, but he never showed it.
You can say pissed off on this podcast.
Okay, thank you. Okay. He never brought it into the dressing room. Mm-hmm. And he mentored those young players like the Neuendijks and the Roberts to the point that when he was handed the cup, Joe Neuendijk's looking at Lanny get the cup, and he's got tears running down his face because he was so proud of like a second dad almost. And so he mentored these guys, and he was a great supporter. He never brought it in the room, and he just said, when I get my chance, I got to make the most of it. And then he went through it. In the Stanley Cup final as well.
You know, I'll never forget. I can still remember. So 1989, I finished high school that year in January. I took the second half of the year off to work. And I remember watching that game in the Stanley Cup final. He's serving the penalty. I can still remember that play as he gets out of the penalty box and he is set up for that goal like it was yesterday.
Up the center and coming in as Loeb. Neuendijk center net. The gun scores! Lanny McDonald!
And McDonald showed you a 26-year-old shot by a 36-year-old man as he put it up and over Patrick Waugh.
When he put it in, like I never really cheered for a lot, but I remember going bonkers when he scored that goal. I can still see that play unfolding and it happening.
10 seconds before he took the penalty, he said, I had this glorious chance on the lip of the crease, and all I had to do was take a little step and get it around Patrick or Waugh's leg, and he says, I only took a quarter instead of a half. He makes the save. Puck goes in the corner. He says, I got to get that puck back. I can't believe I missed this. Bobby Smith was starting to go up the boards, and he grabbed him by the arm and got the penalty, and he says, I'm sitting in the penalty box, and he says, he's a good Catholic boy, Lanny. He'd gone to church earlier that day, not even knowing he was dressing that night, because he'd sat out games 3, 4, and 5 in that series, and this was game 6, the final game, and he said, I sat in that penalty box, and I must have said 400 Hail Marys. And he says, just please kill this penalty, and then when he jumped out of the box, to your point, Elliot, they were on a 3-on-2 with Hack and Loeb and Joe Neuendijk, and it went from Loeb to Newey, and he managed to feather it through Chris Chelios to get it to Lanny. And he said they'd talked about earlier that when you get plays like that, Patrick makes the same move. He spread eagles and slides across, and the only way you're going to beat him is you got to go top shelf over his shoulder.
Wow.
And that's exactly where he put it.
Wow.
So now on the bench, they go crazy for all the obvious reasons. It's a goal. But looking back on it, they said there was a feeling at that moment that this was destiny,
yeah,
that this is meant to be. And Theo Fleury said, our feeling was, game, set, match. We're not losing this. Not when that happens. Mm,
that's a great story. Yeah. Listen, we look forward to this on Saturday afternoon, the first of multiple showings. And check out Scott's big read at sportsnet.ca. ScoMo, thanks so much for stopping by. We got to have Scott on for an extended one.
Yes,
I want to do like the career
media
of Scott
Morrison.
There's
we want to talk about. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Scotty, thanks for having me.
Thanks,
Thank
pal.
You for doing it.
As I mentioned there, Elliot, Scott's one of my favorite people, and we worked a number of years together, both at 640 doing Toronto radio, and then at CBC with the iDesk, which, oh, by the way, did I ever tell you this story? Speaking of the iDesk with Scott Morrison, you know that Crosby used to call me the iDesk guy?
Yes, I have.
You know that one? Yeah. So Colby says, is having a conversation with Crosby. He says, yeah, I just started working at SportsNet. Crosby says, who are you working with? He goes, I mainly work with Jeff Merrick. He goes, oh, the iDesk guy. One time I'm walking through the atrium at CBC and someone calls to me, and this really lets me know where I am in my career. Some guy goes, hey, iDesk. Not hey, guy on the iDesk or hey, Jeff. Hey, iDesk. Identified by the desk. Thank you very much.
Hey, at least they know you.
They knew the desk. I'm not sure that they knew me. There you go. Scott Morrison, looking forward to that piece. Saturday, May 25th, 1 o'clock Eastern, 10 Pacific, Eternal Flames. And his big read is out right now at sportsnet.ca. Time for hashtag Ask31. This is an interesting one to kick it off. From Peyton Turnage, which GM is looking at the most tedious offseason? Which GM looks at what he has in store for him this offseason and says, oh, this is going to be tough.
That's a great question.
It's a wonderful question. Like, you may look at Edmonton and say, ooh, there's a lot of unraveling we need to do there. You may look at Tampa and say, we got a cap.
St. Louis here. Could be the answer. Because you know, the two Bennington? Stanley Cup final teams, you know, Boston too.
I'm just trying to think of which teams need to undo before they add.
After Ottawa announces its coach, mm-hmm. they could sit.
No, I think by tedious means, like, we have a ton of work to do. Not
oh,
like
I thought it
be,
was like, oh, I got nothing to do.
No, twiddling your thumbs? No, no, yeah. no. I think it's quite the opposite. Like, whoa, I've got a lot in front of me here.
Oh. Well, Edmonton, I think, could have a lot to do. But I think they're determined not to be crazy. Florida? Because depending on what they add, they might have to subtract.
Right.
Tampa? Because you're not really interested in ripping that team apart, but you've got to make some big decisions.
What about Nashville?
Yeah, Nashville's an interesting one.
See, Nashville,
I think a lot of these teams have big decisions to make.
Nashville leads into this question then. Lincoln Vamos says, Tourist is lighting up the world championships, Kyle Thurs, of course. Why is this different than with the Preds? What's the decision
I have
there?
A conspiracy theory on Kyle Thurs.
Oh, boy, let's hear it.
And that is that there's a reason he was made the captain of Team Canada.
Okay.
And that is that I think everybody knows that he didn't have a great year, and I think they're hoping it can kickstart him. I think people know that he could be available. Centers are hard to find,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's very, very interesting that he was named the captain of Team Canada. You look at that team, there were a lot of choices.
Oh, big time. And do you think this is a way to kickstart the offseason training?
I do. I think that they were hoping this would motivate him. I think it's going to be interesting.
Nicholas Geyer, would you suggest a communications or journalism degree to become a sports writer / media member?
You know, I don't have a degree, so, you know, I'm different. I will admit that there are some people who will look at, I don't know, a resume or whatever and say, oh, do you have a degree there? Other people don't care. The number one thing I would tell you is the biggest advantage you have now of starting your career that Jeff and I didn't have is that everybody has a voice. There's YouTube, there's Twitter, there's Facebook Live, there's Snapchat, there's Instagram stories. First of all, you should know how to do all of those things. And B, whether you have a journalism degree or not, mm-hmm. you should be out there and putting yourself out there that way, your reports, your opinions, whatever. And you should be trying to cover things that don't get covered. Like, there was one student who said to me, like, what can I cover? I'll cover anything. I said, you know, go cover the Toronto Wolfpack. Be like a good Toronto Wolfpack reporter. I've said many times that my opportunity opened up because the Raptors came in at a time where there weren't a lot of basketball reporters. I was at the right time. go find something out there that you can cover and you can cover well and show you can cover on lots of platforms. It's like a good player now. If you're a good player, people are going to find you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're good on all these different platforms, people are going to find you.
That is the wrong answer. The right answer is English and philosophy degree from the University of Guelph, Ontario.
Oh, my God. Anything with Guelph is the wrong answer.
From
what's 2 + 1? 3 Guelph. No, that's the wrong answer.
Ryan Cork. What kind of offseason do you expect from David Poile and the Nashville Predators with all the Subban trade rumors, signed to Shane rumors?
I think something's going on there. Like, you know, we talked about Turris. You know, he doesn't have to do anything for cap reasons for another year. I'm assuming they're going to get Josi extended, even though he's a year away. They got to find a forward. If they do want to add Duchene, they got to move something out. David Poile has pulled off how many of the biggest trades in hockey in the last 5
whoppers.
Years?
Oh, just whoppers.
He's not afraid.
And he wants a cup.
He'll swing for the fences.
From John Easthope, last question. Looking at the Flames' crease, what sensible and viable options do you see available to fill the open positions? Do you think Smith comes back?
It depends on what he wants, right? Like, if he wants a 2 or 3 year deal, they're not going to do that.
1 year, 2.5. Done?
Unless he thinks he's getting a better offer somewhere else.
Okay.
But I think that he will consider coming back. I think in the long run, they think that Riddick could be the guy. It's time to find out. I think the tough thing now, if you're Calgary, is you've just won the Western Conference and got knocked out in the first round.
Hmm.
How do you go backwards?
We are ending the podcast on that one. I want to thank Scott Morrison for dropping by. Check out his piece Saturday, May 25th, 1 o'clock Eastern at 10 Pacific. Read the big read on the Flames from 86 to 89. Eternal Flames is the name of both pieces. That is available at sportsnet.ca. Thanks to our producer this week, filling in for our normal producer, who's in Halifax for the Memorial Cup tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Emil Delich. Filling in this week is Sho Ali, who handles Hockey Central at noon. Sho, thank you.
Thank you, Sho.
So much for stopping by and helping us out this week. And taking us out this week, an LA-based artist who's also a frequent listener of the podcast. See, Emil's job is getting easy now.
Oh, they're all submitting
because
it,
because artists are now submitting. So that's great. Corey Cunningham, also known as Business of Dreams, released his sophomore album, Ripe for Anarchy, earlier this year. From that record, here's Keep the Blues Away by Business of Dreams on 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
Keep the blues away. Money and bills got me on the fade. Sleep is a distant friend. I close my eyes.